Welcome to Voting Matters, a series of conversations about the voting process from WUKY and the League of Women Voters. Now, here's your co-hosts, Liza Holland, president of the Lexington chapter of LWV, and WUKY's Alan Lytle.
Welcome once again, Liza. It's good to see you today.
It's always good to be in Voting Matters.
Yeah, and it's been a hot minute since we had a chance to talk about elections, and we had the primary. There's an awful lot of activity leading up to that in May, and we kind of took a few weeks off, as you might understand, but we're back at it again.
Yeah, a little tiny summer vacation for us, but I think that this will probably kick off a whirlwind leading up to this year's election.
Now, as far as the league, it never stops.
No, it really doesn't. It's, you know, there's always something going on. And a lot of what we try to do is make sure that voters are informed. And so we're real excited today to have Melissa Colston from Kentucky Refugee Ministries with us. We'll have a marvelous conversation around a recent gathering that they had and some of the stuff that the league is doing to support.
Yeah, well, let's just go ahead and get rolling into that conversation with Melissa. Welcome.
Sounds like a plan. Welcome, Melissa. So glad to have you here.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
So for listeners who may not be familiar, tell us a little bit about Kentucky Refugee Ministries and what you do.
Sure. So KRM, Kentucky Refugee Ministries, we're contrary to the name, we're a secular organization. And we were founded in Louisville in 1990, and then our Lexington office opened in 1998. And we also have an office in Covington that is a small little outpost up there. But we have been working in Lexington now, like I said, for almost, I think we're officially crossed our 28-year anniversary back in June. And we were the only refugee resettlement agency in central Kentucky up until about a year and a half ago when everything changed. And we're no longer providing initial resettlement for refugees, but we're still serving a wide range of folks with different immigration statuses who need help with a wide range of things. And we have a long history in central Kentucky of resettling refugees from all over the world and, all kinds of things that we do. I'm sure we'll get into more of that.
So, yeah, immigration has become quite the topic of conversation recently. And frankly, I hate that it's in this type of a light, because our immigrants here in Lexington are robust and the whole community is really contributing, probably kind of hitting beyond their weight, as it were, as far as contributing to economic development. What, kind of going back to the before, what were the most immediate needs for someone moving here as a refugee?
Well, that's a good question. So a lot of what we did in the before times, as we're saying, really was supporting those first few months after they got here, because when refugees arrived, they needed a lot of support at the beginning. And they still need support ongoing after that point. And we still provide a lot of those services that kind of extend into their time in the U.S. But those first few months were a really intensive time, because folks arrive with what they can carry. You know, they're not bringing with them furniture. They're not bringing with them a lot of money, if any. Sometimes folks would get off the plane with just a backpack. So part of what we did, a big part of what we did, was get people set up with housing, basic furnishings, everything that you need when you move somewhere new to get your life established. So, you know, some place to live, groceries, a nice meal to eat upon arrival that's ready to go, as well as all of the sort of admin side of moving. So getting people set up with IDs and school enrollments and applying for benefits or whatever else is needed by a particular family. So there was a lot that we did in those first few months for folks, but, you know, things come up over time, and that's a lot of what we're dealing with today.
I can imagine there's a lot of fear and lots of questions being asked and all that kind of thing going on. As someone who lived in another country, it is totally overwhelming to come into an entirely new culture, much less with absolutely nothing to start with. So, boy, good work that you're doing.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, and we want to talk about the Kentucky Refugee and Immigrant Inclusion Summit. What was that?
So that's one of my favorite events that we do all year. And that this year was the 12th year that we've hosted that. We've co-hosted it with the schools and with the library and sort of depending on who's involved. But this year, it's a conference that is, it says it in the title, it's all about refugee and immigrant inclusion. And so we have sessions, again, on a wide range of topics, but everything sort of relates back to that greater theme of how do we welcome people and serve people better in our communities all around Kentucky. And that, just that theme, I love the theme. Like, I didn't come up with it, but I love it. Because so much of what refugees and immigrants encounter in our communities and in our culture, you know, it touches everything, right? So when you move somewhere new, you have to learn not only where to go, what grocery store is best for what you need, when things are open, how to get healthcare, like everything, right? How to deal with what your rights are and what, you know, how to find housing. If you've ever moved somewhere new, you know that it's always a little bit different everywhere you go. That topic really, you know, we can hit on a lot of different things from every sector. So business with employers and employment to language services and government and the schools. And so we have this great group of people that come. And I always love to see who registers. And we've had some great participation from the league in the past, which I really appreciate. But it's just a really rich group of people and things that we're talking about and able to look at together about how to make our communities more welcoming and help people get what they need and live their lives and flourish the way that we all want to. So it's a fun event, and I encourage, it just happened, so you missed it, but next year, stay tuned for details for next year.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
And, nope, no problem. And
what was the kind of the scuttlebutt? What were the things that they were being that were talked about in the hallways here?
So I'm always the one running around like a chicken with my head cut off. So I'm not in the rooms, unfortunately. But I know in the sessions that we had this year, I heard a lot of great feedback from our attendees about the range of sessions that we had. So we had folks from like victim services with local entities helping how to help people better, like immigrants and refugees that have been victims, how to help them better, mental health issues, how to celebrate culture and feedback from different immigrant communities in Lexington, sort of bringing their experiences in. We also had some interactive things. One of our sessions, one of our presenters, facilitators did a zine-making workshop about how to welcome neighbors. We had a mock election with the league. And
tell me some more about that. I didn't get to go. So
oh,
did it
yes,
turn out? Did
up.
It turn out well?
I think it did. We were, this was sort of a bright idea of mine and someone else in the league that we're working with, Catherine, we were chatting, and I remembered in my elementary school days having a mock election, and I just really loved that as a kid. And it was put on by one of the social studies classes, like the seniors put it on. And my school is K-12, so we all went through it, even the little kids. And they all told us who to vote for, right? It was just for president, and I'm dating myself, but Ross Perot won in a landslide. Because of course seniors, it's funny. But it was such a fun experience to like do something as a little kid that feels very adult. But I thought, you know, this could be a really great teaching tool for our folks, because part of what we do at KRM is teach people about once you are a citizen, you're not a citizen yet, most of our clients, so you can't vote yet, but once you get your citizenship, you can vote. And it's really important that you vote, and for all these different reasons. But to be able to actually show people what it looks like, what a ballot looks like, what the process looks like, we were so fortunate to have Susan Lamb and her team come, and they actually brought the machines and not ballots with real people's names on them, but the actual style ballot with superheroes and cartoon characters running for all the different offices, so that people could actually go through the whole process from getting the ballot, filling it out, scanning it, and then we announced the results at the summit. And we learned a lot from that. It was a bit of a pilot, I hope, because I am hoping to bring it to KRM for our families to see and learn about local, state, and federal, you know, the whole level, all the different levels of elections, and, you know, get a better understanding of how that works both locally, state level, and at the national level, because it's complicated.
It is. And I think it's intimidating, especially for folks that have never been through it. Mm-hmm. And it keeps changing on us, too. It's funny. I heard a lot of grumbling when we went from the old turn the dial thing to the paper and et cetera, et cetera. But I'm so excited that you had that opportunity to bring all those folks together. Was there anything that was a good takeaway that you would love for the general public to be aware of?
What I think was so neat for us is, like, we're, you know, as the people doing the planning, to see is, like, even though it's at this very sort of closed environment where everybody has been told that this is happening, it was not mandatory, of course. But we were like, hey, during lunch, come fill out your ballot and we'll have our mock election. And we still only had like 41% turnout, even though it was this very specific targeted audience. Like, you know, we're trying to encourage people to do it. We talked about it during the keynote. We did a fair amount of advertising. But we still, you know, like, we're facing a lot of the same barriers, I guess, to overcome that I think our elections folks and everybody who wants everybody to vote is also trying to fight against or build better. I don't know how we tackle these things, but, you know, there's a lot to consider around that. And we saw the same exact thing happen during our mock election.
It's amazing. And, you know, and I think that the biggest thing we fight against is apathy. Mm-hmm. You know, people just not wanting to take the effort to go ahead and do that. And so I guess our task here is to try to find ways to make everybody know how important their particular vote is. Mm-hmm. It was funny. I was doing some voter registration in the high schools, and the conversation came up, you know, why bother? And I'm like, you know, the interesting thing is maybe at a federal level, it's a done deal. But at the local level, there was a mayoral race in Florida just recently that won by 5 votes. So, I mean, you could have turned the tide one way or the other for someone who runs your city. Mm-hmm. It's a big deal. And just having to get that message out over and over and over and
encourage
people to come. Well,
and I've talked about that with my colleagues. Like, their loved ones have said, you know, they don't care to vote. And I'm like, but it really, especially at the local level, it really actually matters. Like, I think sometimes in Kentucky, it feels like it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Like, your vote really doesn't count. But it does. It's like, if you look at the local elections, it really does matter. And I've personally worked as a sheriff at a poll at my local polling place in the past. And that experience was so fun for me, just seeing, you know, how it all works, the behind the scenes, and then to see, you know, when it prints out at the end of the day, you see, you know, how people voted. And I answered questions while people were working through the ballots. It was one of the years where we had a very long ballot, so I called it our little coloring sheet that people had to color in the squares. But, you know, somebody asked me, like, do I have to vote for everything? And I was like, you don't have to vote for anything. And that is a vote. Like, you know, like if you vote for one thing, we see that, you know, undervotes and full, you know, like it, all of those things come out in the results. And we see what people are using their voice about and towards in the results, even though it doesn't necessarily look like that on the surface. Like you get that information as part of any election.
But, you know, shout out to poll workers and the folks that are willing to take the time to be able to do that. And please, everybody know that there's actually a little compensation that's involved with poll working. And so think about signing up for that this fall.
It's a long day, but it is very, I loved it because it was, you know, I was working at my local precinct, so it was all my neighbors coming in, you know people, and get to see how it all works. It's cool. And Susan Lamb's team is fantastic. They are so organized and experts. And I always felt, especially as someone working the polls, like if anything ever came up, they had us, they had our backs. They knew it, you know, they could answer any question that we had. And also shout out to them for coming out to the summit. They were so generous with their time and setting up the machines and staying there for the day. And it was great to have them to collaborate with.
And I'll give one more shout out to the company that makes the machines and whatnot. They went ahead and donated the ballots and whatnot and got it set up for us free of charge. So it's a wonderful thing to be able to really kind of continue to educate our voting populace. Mm-hmm. And so shout out to Susan Lamb and team. One last thing on Chris. You talked about a tremendous number of things that you deal with. If you could pick one that you think is top of mind for everyone right now, what would that be?
One of the things at the summit that we talked about? I think the one of the most popular sessions that we have every year is just like a general update about what's going on in the legal area of everything. So that generally, I think, is top of mind always, is trying to stay up to date on all of the changes, especially in the past year and a half or so. So many things have changed or are under litigation or, you know, under discussion, like all of this, all these different areas of immigration law and how things are being challenged and changed. And it's a lot to keep up with. So we actually had our friend Emily Jones, who used to be our attorney at our office and now works for New Americans Initiative. She's so generous with her time. She gave her session twice. And it is just, it is a downer every time. People come out of it and they're like, yeah, I learned a lot, but I wish I didn't learn some of those things. So it's that, I think, is always going to be top of mind, is just keeping up with those changes, how they're affecting the community, if there are options, what those are. But it's just always really, really tough for a lot of the folks that we work with.
I have a question. Were there a lot of non-English speaking attendees at this at the summit?
So the summit's all in English.
Okay.
And so all of the attendees, I expect all of them to speak English. I know that a lot of the attendees speak more than English. I'm one of the few that only speaks English, and I speak a little bit of some other languages, but I know that I'm often in the minority with the folks that I work with in being mostly monolingual. I'm really, really grateful and privileged to be able to work with folks that have such a wide range of experiences and backgrounds and language capacity. It's amazing.
Yeah, you almost have to have that as a skill set when we're talking about immigrants and new arrivals here.
It is really helpful. I think at KRM, we work really intentionally to make our agency welcoming for employees as well as clients in that way. So I do work with a lot of former refugees and immigrants, folks with different language capacities, but we hire interpreters for in person, we hire interpreters on the phone. you know, whatever it is that is needed for us to be able to communicate with our clients, we're going to, you know, that's like built into the process. That's a huge, huge part of what we do is breaking down that language barrier, because otherwise, you know, people aren't, you know, we're not able to communicate, and that's a big part of it.
So I want to, the dialogue in the media around immigrants and refugees has been so negative recently. What do you think some of the biggest misconceptions are about our immigrant community?
So I think a lot of what we see in the rhetoric or when we're talking about immigrants and refugees is how different people are, immigrants and refugees are, from the folks that live here, and how those differences are negatives, right? Like you're talking about how a lot of what we're hearing is cast in a negative light. So often what we're dealing with when we're trying to talk to people about why it's important to welcome refugees and immigrants and be just welcoming in general is that we see differences as beneficial and important and like a good thing to encourage in our communities, right? These diversity is like a dirty word now, but we see it as, you know, the actual opposite. Like I would love to see, and we do see, like, it's just a fact of the matter of the country that we live in. Like there is a huge range of diversity in our communities, some more than others, of course. But I see, and we at KRM see that as a good thing, right? So I think that is like the crux of much of the misconception is like differences are bad. Like if we're distilling it down. But a lot of the arguments and the talking points and the things that I'm taught to go to tend to dehumanize our folks. And so that's why I try to stay away from those arguments as much mm-hmm. as I can. But sometimes you have to talk about how, yes, economically, refugees and immigrants pull their weight. I just saw something about how... undocumented immigrants, I would have to go back and find the study, but looking at how undocumented immigration and undocumented immigrants affect local economies, and in fact, they lead to more jobs, they lead to better housing, they lead to higher wages. Like the very presence of undocumented immigrants, even though the way that we talk about them, the way that the media and the ecosystem talks about them is that all they do is take, right? The opposite is true. Very often, the opposite of whatever it is people are talking about just is not reflected in the data in any shape or form. Like, studies have been done. We have the data. But I don't really want to talk about the data most of the time yeah. because then we're just reducing people to what their economic output is. And that's really just not what it's about, right? We're about helping people be humans and live their lives. And
it's the stories we tell, right?
Exactly.
I mean, I think about my mother was an immigrant from Sweden, and she never became a citizen. She was proud of her heritage and shared that with me. And I think the vast majority of people out there, if you look through your own family history, you're going to find a story of immigration mm-hmm. and a story of hope and about what this country was supposed to be, that great melting pot.
Right.
So, yeah, I agree with you. And I think maybe we need to be telling better stories more often, right?
Well, and I think so often people in power often like to separate the people in humanitarian situations who need their lives saved or whatever, who have faced persecution. They separate those stories from the people who just want a better life. And I find that to be very disingenuous in a lot of ways, and separating the deserving from the undeserving. It's like, yeah, we all want a better life. Like, why do we have to why do we have to exclude people based on, you know, but that's a another topic for another day. Maybe that's a can
of
worms.
And one of the things that I think is important for us to bring up here is that our immigration system here has been exceedingly broken for a very long period of time.
From the beginning.
And there is no easy way. People will say, oh, well, you know, if they just follow the rules and come here legally, it'll be fine. Well, it's not. And the system itself, the way that we have it set up, that's what I'm really hoping listeners and every voter out there will make sure to let their representatives know that it's a systems problem at its root. And we created the system. We need to fix the system.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we see that reflected in the communities around the country that have long welcomed immigrants and refugees, especially refugees, because there is so much support that they need at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't just come in the form of money. Like the way that the system was set up was that the government would pay a local agency per person that was resettled a certain amount of money. So that money was used to set them up in their new homes, pay for rent, pay for utilities. But then as an agency, you can't buy them all new furniture. Like, it's just not that much money. It's only a couple $1,000s a person. Like, that goes very quickly when you're paying for a first month and a deposit and set up utilities and food and all of that. So we were relying on the kindness of strangers to donate furniture, donate plates, donate pots and pans. And every time that we needed things, if we put out a call, you know, we got the support from the community. We also saw it in volunteer hours and volunteer support. We continue to see it. People want to welcome. And that is true across the country. You know, it may not be true in every little corner of every little state, but it's true. And we know it's true. Like, it has been that way for, you know, the Refugee Act was signed in 1980, but that was not when refugees first started coming to the U.S. Mm-hmm. That's just when the system was set up the way it was. So it's just, it's always been true, and it hasn't stopped being true just because of the changes that are in place at the moment.
That brings us to those volunteer opportunities. How do people get in touch with you, and how do they get the ball rolling on that?
Great question. So our July volunteer, we have a monthly volunteer orientation that happens on the first Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. at our offices. And you can register for that on our website, kyrm.org. And so the July is happening tonight as of our taping, but we'll have another one in August and every month after that. And it's a pretty simple onboarding. You do your orientation, you do some paperwork and a background check, and then you're pretty much good to go. And we have a calendar where you can sign up for different opportunities. Some stuff we have weekly, recurring. Sometimes we have special events pop up or special opportunities that we need support with. Like, we've got an art camp for middle school and like older elementary school kids happening in the next couple of weeks, and we need some support for that, you know, like those kinds of things that pop up from here and there, as well as the ongoing weekly volunteer opportunities that, you know, it can be as small as a half an hour, an hour of your time, up to, you know, however much you want to be involved. And we love our volunteers.
I come from a nonprofit background, and we always talk about time, talent, and treasure. And so our volunteers are part of that. If someone wants to donate to KRM, or maybe even donate some furniture and whatnot, I know we don't have the resettlement that we have been having, but I imagine there's still some needs out there.
There are still some needs. Unfortunately, at this point, we don't have the capacity to take like furniture or home goods anymore. Okay. We're really just focusing on consumable things like toiletries and diapers and cleaning supplies. That those have become even more critical after the changes to SNAP eligibility that went into effect last year. A lot of our clients no longer can access SNAP if they don't have a green card or citizenship. So without that supplemental funding, cleaning supplies, toiletries, diapers, anything that they can get from us really does help their budgets and helping them feed their families so that they can use, you know, whatever income they have to pay for food and other things that we can't provide. So those consumables are super important for us to help our clients get through the day to day. And then for cash donations, which are hugely important now with all of the changes to our federal funding, cash donations have meant, private donations have meant that we can help anybody. Doesn't matter what their immigration status is or how long they've been here. Whereas with federal funding, we were really restricted to specific immigration statuses. They have to have been here for less than 5 years. Like all of these, it
rules
used to be that we had to, someone would come to us and we'd say, okay, so when did you come here? What's your status? Now we just say, what do you need?
Nice.
And private donations are the way that we're able to do that. And it feels so great to be able to just help people and not worry about where they're from or mother's maiden name or anything like that. So donations, we can take, you got anything, we'll take it. We'll, you know, we'll take stocks.
Just not furniture. No furniture.
Not
just
furniture.
No furniture, yeah.
Anything cash-wise we can take. And if you have anything complicated, let us know. We can help you work it out. But credit cards, cash, checks, whatever you need, we got it.
And you're located in Lexington, your headquarters?
Yeah, we're really fortunate to have the best landlords. We're in the Bread Box just above
nice.
West 6th Brewery. And we're on the second floor. Our door to our office is between Smithtown and Food Chain. Great neighbors.
Great neighborhood.
It's a great little spot to be in.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, fantastic. We so appreciate you coming in and being a part of this today and reaching out to this community. I guess final kind of question for you, how could regular citizens be better neighbors to our immigrant community?
That's a great question. It's tricky, right? Because there's often a language barrier, cultural differences, and just even being in the neighborhoods where our folks tend to live. So a lot of folks that really want to be really welcoming, it's hard to make that connection,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's a lot of the little things, right? Like smile, be nice, be generous. And then there's all the way up to the big things, whether that's donating your time or your money or doing advocacy, getting involved with organizations that support refugees and immigrants, paying attention to those issues at the local level, especially, you can make a really big impact. Getting in touch with your local elected officials is great. Recognizing when systems are more welcoming, I think, is also great to say, you know, thank you, I'm glad you're doing this, or hey, this could be better. Pointing those things out where you see them is also can be really helpful sometimes because folks don't see what the barriers are when the systems are entrenched a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So some of what I do is try to encourage our community in general to be more welcoming because I think when it's kind of like with curb cuts and opening doors that open on their own, you know, automatic doors, it benefits everyone, whether or not you need it. It's going to help the mom with the stroller or the person with the walker, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats kind of thing. So same applies.
Perfect.
When you're welcoming refugees and immigrants.
Yeah. And you could even just add, just don't be a jerk.
Yep. You know, we try to be more positive. Be nice. It's nice.
Be nice. Be nice. There's our little thought for the day, if you will. Anything to add, Liza? I know the league has got all kinds of stuff happening in July.
Yeah,
and August.
I'm gonna just kind of take a moment to let everybody know that we do have a great committee chaired by Catherine Harbor called Global League, and that I was looking at trying to make better outreach and be a collaborative partner and whatnot with our international and refugee communities both. We're also looking at trying to reach some kind of low voter turnout sorts of groups with that. Our state league has been pretty active in this kind of transparency around what's happening here in ICE. And so I would recommend that anybody who's interested in that check out LWVKY, because they have two different reports out now about and have been talking to jailers across Kentucky. We actually, as of that particular report, had 400 detainees through ICE here just in Lexington. So it's a thing. And unfortunately, the data is showing that like 80% of the detainees do not have any criminal history, nor do they have a criminal charge. So that's not right. And so it's Americans and it's your neighbors, and we need to tighten up that system in a massive way.
And another thing, when we're talking about elections, there's been this push to not have party primaries, you know, more of an open primary, because we've seen what that might, you know, you get people on the far, far left and the far, far right. And if we're ever going to come together, you almost have to have the open primary system here in Kentucky and everywhere, really.
I would agree with you, because the reality is that our representatives are being chosen by a very small percentage of the population in the primaries. Here in Kentucky, we're one of only, I think, 8 states that have completely closed primaries. So that disenfranchises, I think, 136,000 people. And that's a growing number in Kentucky that are just not willing to claim either party at this point. So that is another thing the league is active in doing, is looking at opening up our primaries and also educating people about how important primaries really are. I mean, if you want to have a reasonable person represent you, then the primaries are the time to be able to get out and vote and be able to do that. And that's not historically been the case.
So that's put that at the top of the to-do list
for the
league and everywhere else.
Yes, know. Sir.
Melissa, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate your time coming in and telling us all about Kentucky Refugee Ministries.
It's so good to be here. Thank you.
And Liza, of course, we'll see you next time as well.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
That'll wrap up this edition of Voting Matters, and we'll see you soon.
You've been listening to Voting Matters, a podcast produced in collaboration with WUKY and the League of Women Voters. Subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts, or download Voting Matters from the podcast page at wuky.org. We also have links from the organizations and guests mentioned in this program. See you next time for Voting Matters.